From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It is a thrill to be sitting across from my guest, Nikki Caro, who first came to my attention in a little film called Whale Rider in 2002. But since then, she's done North Country, one of my favorite films, actually, The Vintner's Luck, which I think is really a beautiful film, McFarlane, USA, and her newest film is The Zookeeper's Wife. First of all, Nikki, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And one of the things I really have come to love about your work, and even going back to is like Memory and Beauty, is you basically make these films about people sort of coming into their own power in these communities, sort of figuring out, and it can be a man or a woman.
Yeah.
But I wonder where that comes from for you as a storyteller.
Well, I suppose you don't have to look very far because I come from New Zealand, you know, I come from the bottom of the world, and I think something that's consistent in the New Zealand character is that we kind of fight really hard. If you follow rugby, you'll see that, you know, New Zealanders kind of punch above their weight in the sporting world. And
I have an all-black shirt, yeah, so yes, I know.
That's right. And in the filmmaking world also. I don't think any of us are sort of grown up to consider ourselves heroic in any way. So I think these sort of characters that you're identifying are all very ordinary, but respond to the challenges of their circumstance and become heroic in their own lives and the lives of their communities.
And it's often a scene, I mean, it's basically even the first scene in The Zookeeper's Wife of really kind of this almost a dreamlike beauty.
Yes.
Almost the way these characters see the world, the way they want to see the world. I mean, it's the end of McFarlane, USA. It's about halfway into The Vintner's Luck.
Yeah.
But there's one scene of just almost a pictorial, like overwhelming pictorial beauty. And I just wonder if you go in thinking about this. I mean, for example, that first scene in The Zookeeper's Wife.
With that, it was really about representing Warsaw in a way before the Second World War. This amazing period that Poland and Europe had between the wars, where Warsaw in particular was very cosmopolitan, very sophisticated city, very beautiful city. And overnight, it changed. And over the course of the war, it was destroyed, including the zoo. So in making the zoo, because it's not a real zoo, we built that zoo for the movie. We wanted to make a Belle Epoque zoo, somewhere that was really beautiful. And we shot that sequence over 2 days in pre-production, actually. We weren't even working in the main production because of weather. And so when we came back to the main unit to begin the shoot, the zoo had been destroyed because it had to go through sort of 5 very distinct stages of bombing and destruction over the course of the time span of the movie. And when I came on day one to the zoo and it was all broken, it was all busted, I got really sad. It was horrible. I only experienced that zoo in that state for 2 days. And I guess in a way it just gave me another level of sorrow about war. And it's a low level of sorrow. It's not up there with the loss of life, but the loss of beauty is a significant byproduct of war, a consequence of war.
If you would tell the audience what The Zookeeper's Wife is about.
Yes, okay. The Zookeeper's Wife is a true story of Antonina and Jan Sabinski, who were a Polish Christian couple that ran the Warsaw Zoo. And in 1939, the Nazis...
The Warsaw Zoo basically being almost like an art, I mean, a really beautiful edifice.
Yes, yes, the Warsaw Zoo, absolutely beautiful, small, Belle Epoque zoo in the city of Warsaw. And Warsaw was bombed in 1939. This is what started the Second World War. And bombs fell on and in the zoo. And many of the animals were killed and ran away. And this zookeeper couple devised an ingenious scheme with the help of a former colleague who had become the head Nazi zoologist, of smuggling Jews out of the ghetto and into the now empty cages and tunnels of their zoo. And over the course of the war, they sheltered and saved the lives of just over 300 people. Which is extraordinary enough, but even more extraordinary was the fact that the zoo was being used as a place where the German army would store their armaments. So there were German guards, Nazi soldiers, on the grounds every day from dawn till midnight.
And this movie, for me, falls into this, I guess what I think was being your purview in that it is the thing you were talking about, a circumstance which people are kind of forced to rise to an occasion.
Yeah.
And you're saying that fits into the New Zealand character, but I've seen other films in New Zealand. They're not all about this kind of thing. So I think you're playing with a pretty broad brush here, Nikki. But
I suppose I speak to the New Zealand character somewhat personally.
No kidding. I think I got that. But this idea of having to – is this some way of you telling your own story in a lot of cases in these sort of metaphorical terms about just coming into your own and recognizing you've got to respond to this? Because I know for the first time we talked, you told me you never studied film as a –
No, not really, no. I would say I would not like to draw that line in this case because, you know, what Antonina and Jan did, it was so extraordinary. They didn't consider themselves heroic at all. They considered themselves ordinary people.
And but your films are almost always about, as you were saying before, and people, because of circumstances, are forced to, and they're all people who live in these communities, so we get a sense of the landscape in which they live.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're very much parts of these places where they live. They don't really stand out in any way, but they come to sort of recognize that they have to stand for something.
Yes, that absolutely, absolutely. And these two did this for no other reason than in those moments that was the right thing to do. And that radical humanity, that decency, you know, human decency, I find particularly inspiring because anybody is capable of that. And yet these qualities, I mean, we don't even talk about decency really anymore. That's something that feels like an old-fashioned quality.
But the idea of people recognizing decency, I mean, it's and some of these things you've done are kind of set in the recent past or in the past, and but the idea of decency being something that people have to look for, I mean, it's certainly a part of McFarland USA.
Oh, yeah.
It's certainly a part of Whale Rider, certainly a part of Vintner's Lucky, and this idea of just the tenets of decency and being good to people around you plays a part in the way you think as a dramatist, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. And, you know, and maybe just to go back to Whale Rider, which is set in the Maori world. And so it's a tribal culture. And so in the Maori world, it's not about the individual. It's about the group. It's about your allegiance to, firstly, your family, and then to your hapu, which is this collection of families in your village, and then to the tribe. And I love that. I love the idea of community and that we need to take care of one another. And I guess that's probably one of the things that drew me very much to Zookeeper's Wife.
But I feel like your movies are almost always, in one way or another, set in kind of in cities. I mean, we have a sense of the place in which these people live.
Sense of place is incredibly important in the movies that I make.
Why is that?
Honestly, it makes my job really easy. I like to tell stories with some basis in truth, whether it's a real person or a real place, or in Whale Rider's case, a real legend that's very meaningful to the people. In that way, I can go to the place, I can hang out in the place, I can eat the food, well, in North Country, I played pool a lot with the locals and drank a lot in bars. I can go there and find what is the truth of the place? And then it makes my job as a director rather easy because I can represent that truth on the screen. I would never consider myself as the filmmaker to know more than the people whom the story is about or the community that the story is set. So I go and find out. And it's super fun.
It's a treatment. My guess who's making me really hungry right now is Nikki Caro. Her new film as director is The Zookeeper's Wife. But I guess I'm getting back to this just because I feel like this is something that I saw Memory and Beauty after I saw Whale Rider. But it seemed to me that it was the way you worked from almost the very beginning. I mean, that was this aesthetic that you had for yourself. And I guess I'm just wondering, you're saying it comes from life, but I wonder if it comes from art as well, because I know you as a, you talked about being a sculptor, and just if you found it as you were doing that, you were kind of building pieces that fit into the community in a certain way, or were built to evoke a response from community?
I was educated at art school. I've always had kind of pretty strong aesthetic sense. So that's one side of it. I feel pretty confident in my eye and in the creation of images. On the other side, and equally important, is feeling. And my role as the person who is responsible and answerable to two things. So firstly, to the story. I have to tell that story incredibly well. I have to honour that story. I'm never bigger than the story. The story is always bigger than me, and it's always a mountain I have to climb in order to represent it faithfully and well. The other big responsibility I have, and I take it equally seriously, is my responsibility to the audience, to deliver that story to the audience in the most entertaining and moving way. And I do like to make films or bring stories to screen that are, that can allow people to feel.
It's interesting because you're talking about, in both these cases, and as a filmmaker and as a sculptor, you're talking about scale and size.
Yeah.
And in both of these cases, they're really big undertakings, and there are things that you want to have an immediate effect. Mm-hmm. And as a sculptor, I mean, you people are getting physically close to something. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed as a filmmaker, you make these large pieces that they're also about intimacy, so people get really close to them really fast too, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that tension between the epic and the intimate is really important to me, and I work between those two polarities all the time with every movie. I love, you know, the big war sequences in Zookeeper's Wife.
Which, as much as I love anything like that.
What's that? The tiny little rabbit, you know?
But this is a very different kind of undertaking for you, this movie. I mean, it's really about, I was going to say, it's about fear, but I think, interestingly, fear plays a part in almost everything you've done.
Yeah,
and this is a very different kind of very life or death fear.
Yes.
But the other fears are just, in terms of emotional scale, are just as epic too. I mean, this epic sense of fear in drama is something that you're attracted to, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, this is really different in terms of a war movie, a Holocaust movie, because it has a woman at the center and it speaks to her experience. Really struck me that most of our war movies, Holocaust movies, if you like, are centered on the male experience. And that's not hard to understand because men play such an active role in war.
And but we've also seen in so many movies, there's kind of a found grammar.
Yes, so many. But war happened to women too. And it happened to children and it happened to animals. So in that way, it felt like a slightly new frontier to tell a war story, a Holocaust movie, about a woman's experience. And her experience was so interesting because it's both very highly exotic, because, you know, she almost never leaves the zoo, and very, very domestic, because she creates a sanctuary for those people, which involved them hiding in cages often. But it was the quality of the sanctuary that she provided, the art and the music and the tenderness and the comfort that allowed these people to live through their war with some measure of decency and dignity and humanity intact. And I felt that that was a wonderful story to tell, wonderful war story to tell.
Busy, did a great job. We'll take a break. My guest, who's still figuring things out, I guess, is Nikki Carroll. Her new film is director, is The Zookeeper's Wife, is The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's The Treatment. My guest is the director, Nikki Carroll, whose new film is director is The Zookeeper's Wife. You were just saying during the break that you're not really reflective about that, which is interesting because your characters, are forced to come reflective. They often aren't. I mean, these places they live are moving in one direction, and they're forced to become reflective in a lot of ways, aren't they?
Yes, I think so. But for me, you know, in my practice, I sign on to these movies and these stories and these characters, and I give myself over to them totally. And it's not about me. I don't get self-reflective about myself in the process. I'm much more, I mean, totally about how do I serve them? How do I serve it, the story, and the movie? And so when you ask me, you know, about process and all the films lined up and what they, how they are
connected,
I have to think a little bit.
That's interesting, because I figured one of the things that you're talking about, for example, Jessica Chastain's character in Zookeeper's Wife, and we can say there are similarities between Keisha Castle Hughes and Winona Ryder and Charlize Theron in North Country.
Yeah.
These are women who also are kind of looked down upon because they're women. I mean, the world is changing, and the people around them don't realize the world is changing, and these women are forced to just sort of lead their lives as if they had some say in what they do, and they're not looked upon as people who, I mean, you have to go back to the 30s for Zookeeper's Wife, but it's, you know, it's like the 80s in North Country, and it's contemporary society in Wales, right? This idea of women refusing to be left behind, which is in some ways kind of the elemental struggle for women, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and unfortunately it still is. I mean, it's horrifying that in 2017, we're having this conversation. I mean, it's fascinating to me that I had never heard this story before about Antonina Zivinska. Nobody had heard this story before. And yet, it doesn't surprise me that it fell through the seams of history, because I don't think women's experience, well, I think that women's experience historically has somehow been considered less relevant than the male experience. Otherwise, we would know all of these stories. So on the one hand, that's incredibly depressing. On the other hand, how amazing that we have all these stories still to discover. Hidden Figures, for instance. I mean, that's the perfect example. Why did we not know about those women?
Oh, we know exactly why we didn't know about these women.
But we know now. So what about all of their sisters? What about all of those great experiences and the great contributions women have made to history in every area of life? I'm looking forward to seeing those films.
I hate to be reductive about this, but I guess I wonder how much for you of filmmaking is almost instinctive as compared to really just, I mean, because clearly you have to build a lot of storyboard and do the kinds of things just because so much of it is just about preparation and you can't just wait for accidents to happen. But it sounds to me like you connect to these stories once you sign on in an emotional way that becomes kind of instinctive to you.
Yeah. I think instinct is huge. I tend to be massively prepared. I don't like to get on a set and wing it. But once on the set, I operate out of instinct entirely. So we're prepared, we're ready to go, but then whatever magic happens, I can go with that.
And for example, as we were talking about the opening scene, that clearly is an example of that, where in pre-production you're just doing this thing and find, wait a second, this is a metaphor for the world before. It's basically we're watching the last vestiges of a world that's going to literally be blown apart.
Yes.
In the film.
Yeah. What's interesting about that sequence and about this film is the animals. And animals is all about instinct. I didn't want to make a movie that required the animals to be anything other than what they are. I totally resisted the idea of fake animals in a real story about a real woman and her zoo. So there's very, very little CG work. And in terms of the animals in the movie, they are all, none of them have learnt tricks for the movie. There's no special actions that they were ever required to do. The philosophy was just allow them to be themselves We'll keep our cameras back.
So you want it to feel as much like as a zoo like possible and not like a circus.
Yeah, exactly. And Jessica Chastain was the magic ingredient here because she's totally an animal whisperer. So I could
Did you know that going in? It was a conversation you had early on.
Yeah, no, I did know that she loved animals. She's a famous animal advocate.
Well, it's one thing about loving animals, another thing to be next to an animal who weighs 4 tons.
Exactly. But she, to what I couldn't have predicted the magic that would go down between her and the creatures, the incredible level of trust between she and they, and the fact that the vision that I had for the movie and the way the movie could be made could come true with this woman. And that's instinct. That's instinct. It is. I mean, I hope I don't make it sound really cosmic because it really isn't. It's like instinct is a very real and visceral filmmaking tool that I rely very much on. I trust it.
Is that part of you making yourself the audience surrogate that you were talking mm-hmm. about? So you know if yep. you're responding to it that you feel the audience will as well.
Yeah, it's really true. I mean, when I'm there with them, with the actors on the set or with the animals, I really am feeling it all.
It's the treatment. We're talking about instinct with director Nikki Carroll, whose new film as director is The Zookeeper's Wife. I was wondering, though, because your first film was in a lot of ways very different than the films you've made mm-hmm. since, but mm-hmm. did you get that same feeling of instinct and just sort of like giving into it even then?
Oh, yeah. I was surprised by it then. It's hard to describe. I'll try to describe it without seeming cosmic or insane. But it's like everything, for me, it's like everything in the world stops. And I am absolutely zero focused on every given moment. And I suppose that's what actors are talking about when they're talking about being in the moment, completely present, nothing else distracting. And that's an exhilarating place to find myself as a young filmmaker. That was incredible.
Was it more so the case in making films than it was when you were working as a sculptor?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really? Okay, so I wonder if that part of it, because so much of that kind of physical work that working on that scale demands as a sculptor, I just wondered if you found yourself just being immersed in it as much as when you're making a movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's really nice as an artist to just be with yourself and the work and be in your studio. And that's, I mean, that's beautiful. We should all live that life. But as a filmmaker, it's a high wire act because any day on a film set is driven by time and space and money, actually. So, and you have one shot at it, and this never escapes me. The idea that the decisions I make in that moment on that day, in that scene with those people, will, I mean, I hope, outlive me. So let's make them good decisions. Let's be very conscious about what's happening and the work that's being done in that moment because it lives for a very, very long time. And I try very hard not to screw it up in the moment that I'm creating it.
Because I guess what I'm thinking about that seems to happen so much in these films too is we're talking, it feels like you really are finding ways to sort of out yourself. I mean, that sort of sense of being in a city, which filmmaking is, you're surrounded by people who are working towards the same goal, but you've got to be singular in your way because you've got to be the person who's moving this thing forward. And at some point, the protagonists in your film all become the story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's really interesting to me. And as you're describing yourself, this really feels like you're finding a way to sort of realize this.
You're absolutely right. And I don't talk about this very much, but it's really been true that the story of making the film is also the story of the film. So in Whale Rider is the very best example in that there was quite a lot of criticism around the fact that I was directing it, not being Māori, to a certain extent being female, but more to the point, not being of the culture. And I was really troubled by that. And there was stuff in the media that was really critical of me. And the chief from the real chief from the tribe came to my office unannounced and sat me down, and he knew that I'd read it, this editorial, and he knew that I was upset, and he shut the door and he said two things. Firstly, that I had been chosen by their people to tell their story. They had chosen me, and that I needed to know that. But the second thing was, he said, you have to be a chief about it. Now you have to be the chief. And that I've never, I carry that with me all the time. I have to be the chief. And in terms of Whale Rider, I realized in that moment that this little girl, Pi, played by Keisha Castle-Hughes in the movie, was not very different from me in that she had work to do, and that the person that she, the one person whose support and respect and love that she needed, couldn't give it. And so, but there was no choice, that she would have to do her work, and that hopefully he would come to see who she was. Now, that was exactly my story as the filmmaker. I so desperately needed the support of the culture, of Maori people. And I didn't have it. I had it from the people that I really needed it from. I had it from the tribe, but I didn't have it from academia, or I didn't have it from political Maori as a whole. But in that moment, I realized I just have to be like her. I just have to do my work. And the film will speak for me. The film will hopefully put all of this to rest. And it did. You know, the film was really embraced by all New Zealanders.
And around the world. But yeah. It's so interesting to talk to you about this, because I really now find, and it was something I was thinking before we sat down, that at some point, these protagonists feel like they're you, because they're moving into a world, and at some point, they're going to have to leave what people think of them behind to exercise their own sense of self, whatever their mission is. And oftentimes, their missions, almost always, in fact, the missions they're forced into rather than choosing these.
Yeah.
But they're going to have to sort of seize this opportunity by the reins and ride with it. And that it's got to be, in some ways, feel like what it's like to make a film, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's very personal. And it's also back to intimate and epic. You know, making a film is an epic undertaking. It's also a very intimate and personal journey you go on. When you're me, anyway.
Well, you're the one I'm talking to about, so I hope it's you. But please come back. It's great talking to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. My guest, who apparently is quite hungry, is Nikki Caro. Her new film as director is The Zookeeper's Wife, our recording engineer here. Here at KCRW. Thank goodness I'm home again. It's Kat Yore. The show is edited by Blake White, who's associate producer. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. To catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.